healthcare professionals are doing heroic work each and every day to save the lives of America's children. But they're being forced to fight through a system that works better for drug companies and insurance companies than for the American people that all these wonderful health professionals entered their profession to serve.
Let me put my gloves on and my scrubs on. Dr. Carter to the rescue. Excuse me if I'm late, but like a thief, it takes time to be this great.
Hello and welcome to NPR's Planet Money. Today is Tuesday, July 6th. I'm Alex Bloomberg.
And I'm David Kestenbaum. That was President Obama you heard at the top. He was talking about a year ago about how messed up our healthcare system is.
Today on the podcast, how messed up our healthcare system is. We're going to meet a man with a famous last name who knows a lot about that. He publishes something called the Pain in the Butt Index.
The Pain in the Butt Index is not what made his family famous, though. Our indicator today, $7 billion. By one estimate, that is how much money our country wastes every year because our medical billing system is way too complicated.
And that is a perfect indicator for today because the man with the famous name, he's in the business of overly complicated medical billing. Are you ready? Here's his name.
My name is Jonathan Bush, and I'm the CEO of Athena Health.
Yes, that Bush, his cousin and uncle were president of the United States. I like to imagine him going home for Thanksgiving, and everyone's like, well, when I was president, and Jonathan Bush gets to talk about what he does, which is medical billing.
Which is the reason we were talking to Jonathan Bush. He is in the middle of that $7 billion number we talked about at the top, how much money is wasted with our billing system. He runs a company, a really big company. When it went public a few years ago, it was worth about $1 billion. And the sole purpose of his company is to deal with doctors' paperwork.
The company's called Athena Health. And basically, their business is that doctors will say, I am so tired of wrestling with all these different insurance companies, all the different rules that they have. I'm tired of the paperwork, the billing codes. You do it. I don't care. You can take 5% of all my checks. That's fine. I hate it so much. I have my own staff that has to handle it right now. You do it. Jonathan Bush, you take care of this for me. So this was not always Jonathan Bush's lot in life. I spent a day hanging out with him, and he actually had a very improbable career path. After high school, he wanted to go to Wesleyan.
I transferred to Wesleyan because I always wanted to go, and I got rejected. I actually got early rejection. Did you know there was such a thing? I did not know they had – I knew about early acceptance, but this was like a mercy killing where they said, listen, son, you're so far off on your, like, plans here. Rush back to your college counselor and radically retool. It's also rejected from Yale, which as a Bush is quite a feat. You have to work at that.
So he did graduate from Wesleyan. His first healthcare job was actually driving an ambulance in New Orleans, sometimes late at night, which he loved. And he ended up sort of by accident in the healthcare billing business, started out helping to run a small birthing practice in California, basically helping moms have babies.
And the first summer we did it, it's going to be the summer of wow. Every pregnant mom is going to come into this place and say, wow. This is corny, but we were really excited. We really thought we had it. We literally, you could hear babies' first cries through the HVAC ducts in my little office.
Jonathan told you that it wasn't uncommon for the staff to actually tear up, like, weekly. But the problem with, like, being in the miracle of life business is the miracle of life is not free. You still have to get paid.
And this is how he ended up in the job he's in now. This is when he learned what every doctor and every hospital learns at some point, which is that getting paid is a big pain in the butt. Just listen to the jargon of what he might have to go through just to get reimbursed for one patient.
And she says, I'm on Medicaid. Maybe she's on Medicaid and maybe she's not. Maybe she was on last week, but she's not on this week. Maybe she's on a Medicaid, but she's on the IPA version. There's a Happy Valley IPA, and she's in that IPA because she happened to have chosen a primary care doctor who's in that IPA. So now we can't bill Medicaid. We have to bill this IPA, and we can only treat a patient from that IPA if we have an authorization from a primary care doctor in that IPA. Right? And then we get in, and then you have to submit the claim. Now, the claim has to have a special modifier.
Let's just bring him down here. It doesn't sound like he's getting ready to stop anytime soon. I'm getting the sense there's a lot of acronyms to deal with in the healthcare billing.
Yeah, I got lost, and he went on for a little while.
But you brought him around.
You know, you can. I waited.
For the tests you do separately, and sometimes it's all inclusive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So it was very hard to get paid. It was a big part of your business.
It became our obsession all day long. We thought nothing about birth. We spent all our time screwing around with trying to get checks.
So about 10 years ago, Jonathan and his colleagues started a new business, medical billing, which involves receiving a different kind of delivery.
So, Alex, you hear that sound?
Yeah, I do.
I got up at 5 a.m. to record that for you.
Thank you.
Can you tell what it is?
It sounds like something thumping.
Yep. This is the sound of doctor's mail arriving at a kind of loading dock at Athena Health. So a mail truck every morning arrives at 6 a.m. The doctors who are paying Athena Health to handle all the billing, their mail gets rerouted here.
Oh, whoa, what was that? Did you record that in stereo?
I did. Nice.
Yeah.
I can actually tell you how much mail they get to the pound. This is Glenn Conlon, one of the guys helping pick up the boxes.
When we receive the mail, you see John here. He's weighing it on that scale over there. And the reason why he's weighing it is because we've done this long enough that we know how many sort of checks per pound of mail we're going to get. And the reason...
You know, how many checks per pound?
Yes. So we would get about 26 checks per pound of mail.
So in May, they got 28,000 pounds of mail. All the mail gets opened by this machine that makes a really annoying noise.
Whoa, you weren't kidding.
So, Alex, the envelopes, once they open them up, inside there are pieces of paper which explain this medical claim was covered or this one wasn't or part of it was covered with an explanation. And often there's a perforation, and below that there is a check. So a lot of this mail comes from insurance companies, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, because these checks, they were obviously printed out by a computer, then they were sent through the mail, delivered by hand. Here they get opened, they get rescanned into a computer, they get checked by hand. Finally, they're electronically deposited to a bank. So it's entirely possible that the money started out in one bank, it goes through this long route, and then it basically gets redeposited in what, who knows, could be the same bank.
We'll probably do over $1 billion this year. And
$1 billion in paper checks.
Paper checks, correct.
So Dave, this is really sort of incredible. What was the smallest check you saw?
I asked them, and they said they'd gotten checks for a penny.
All right, I'm doing the math right now, but I think a stamp, last I checked, cost 44 cents. So aren't they losing money by sending a one-penny check?
Yeah, there are a lot of inefficiencies in the system.
I guess that's the point of our podcast here, isn't it?
The mail actually isn't the only paper part. And there's another room nearby here where people are just looking at faxes. Here's Jonathan Bush.
The average doctor gets 1,154 faxes a month.
Is that a real number?
That's a number. I counted.
What do you mean you counted?
So part of the service that we offer is that we actually read all their faxes for them, and we count them. And there's 1,154.
For your clients, at least.
For the first 400 doctors that we did this for a year ago, that was their average. It's still in that 1,000-ish range.
Did you know that in advance?
No. You could have knocked me over with a feather. It made the business model a little shaky. We had a negative gross margin for our first 2 years. Millions and millions of faxes we read over the first quarter of this year. Millions.
By read, you mean scanned, right?
No, I mean I had people in India read.
So insurance companies are sending one-penny checks through the U.S. Postal Service and faxing things.
Oh, the faxes are not from insurance companies. They're from another part of the healthcare system entirely. A lot of them are from labs that do testing. So it'll be the results of blood tests or eye tests or things like that. It's not actually billing related.
Oh, I see. But still, it's like Jonathan's company handles that because it all falls under the rubric of paperwork. It's really funny that like the healthcare system seems to be like 20 to 30 years behind the rest of the world in its communications technology. Like
they're exactly 20 years behind, yeah.
And when was the last time you sent a fax, you know?
And I also love that the people reading the faxes and deciding how to categorize them, there are some of them here, but they're also in India, which from our previous podcast, we know they're experts in paperwork.
Yeah. So you could argue that Jonathan knows as much about healthcare bureaucracy as anyone out there. And in fact, his company has come up with a way of ranking insurance companies in an index, which insurance companies are easy to deal with, which ones are more complicated.
We rank all the payers. We have this pain in the butt index, and it ranks how big a pain in the butt all the different insurance companies are to deal with across six metrics.
Is it called the pain in the butt index?
No, but I can't explain it any better way because it's such a pain in the butt to deal with insurance companies.
So, Alex, there is some good news, which is that there are people at the top of that list. And
right.
He says that the paper part of billing actually has gotten a lot better. 70% of the claims they file are filed electronically. But it turns out even insurance companies that do all the billing electronically, they can still end up on the pain in the butt index.
That's because the rules they use to get paid are incredibly complicated. And insurance companies aren't really standardized. So one insurance company in one state might require a doctor's signature, where in another state, the insurance company wouldn't. Some insurance companies require a referral. Different insurance companies might use entirely different billing codes for the same procedure.
Oh, don't get Jonathan Bush started about billing codes.
And the codes make a lot of sense, like LNZ32 or something like that. There's one that's ADN. Oh, it's an ADN. We got a lot of ADNs this week. Additional documentation needed. There's another code, BAC. That's a denial code. Bill another carrier. Try another window from the Monty Python, you know.
So, Alex, what I learned is that every little code, there's pretty much always a story behind it. And sit back, listeners. We're going to tell you the story of code number 163. I don't know what number it is. But it's basically the story of one Blue Cross Blue Shield plan in one state that wanted to do something that makes a lot of sense, wanted to negotiate a better rate for this shot, these shots that doctors were giving in their offices to patients. And the medicine for the shot cost something like $12.
So this insurance company wanted to try to pay less than that $12. They wanted to negotiate a lower price with the drug manufacturers. But they couldn't tell which manufacturers were supplying the medicine to the doctors because when the doctors filled out the billing form, they filled in this code that says we did the shot, but the code does not say who we bought the medicine from.
Because the codes, the little codes that were used, didn't allow you to specify. Now, there's another set of codes. The old codes are called J codes, and the new codes are called NDC codes. And the NDC codes do have somewhere in their little digits and letters the identity of the drug maker. So the memo goes out off to a million fax machines, and it says, we now want you to use NDC codes.
So that sounds simple. The insurance company says, look, just please use these new codes. But there was a problem. The codes that the insurance company told the doctors to use was too long for the insurance company's own computers.
The systems can't fit the new codes in because there's more digits in them. Literally, there's like 11 digits for an NDC code, and a J code is only 8 digits long. So you'd think, all right, we can't collect data this way. Maybe we could do a survey, something else. And they say, no, no. What we'll do is we'll have all the doctors truncate, using a special algorithm, their 11-digit codes into 8-digit codes, creating a whole new third code set, right? And so there's a memo, and we got to give it to you. And it says, when submitting NDC numbers, or when submitting drugs for medication, you have to use the NDC code. However, the LRS system or the LST system only has room for 8-digit numbers. Therefore, you will need to truncate your NDC numbers, comma, or shorten them. They threw that in for the English major. And then it gives you instructions, 3 easy steps, like Jenny Craig, to a leaner NDC number. First, if the NDC number begins with a 0, drop the 0, use the next 8 digits, disregard the last 3 digits or 2 digits, whatever it is. Then it says, the second one I'll never forget is, if the leading digit is not a 0, but the 6th digit is a 0, use the first 5 digits, drop the 0, use the next 3 digits, disregard the last 2 digits.
So Dave, you know what I think? I think Jonathan Bush has definitely found his calling. He really, really gets animated by medical billing inefficiency.
He does love to tell these stories.
So the story has bad news and good news. The bad news is that here's an insurance company that asked its doctors to use codes that the insurance company's own computers couldn't handle. Of course, the good news is that they were doing it to try to save money. They wanted to negotiate a better rate, which presumably would have brought down healthcare costs for everybody.
And this is really the deeper reason why medical billing is so complicated. You have all these different insurance companies in all these different states coming up with different plans. And that, you could argue, is something you want. They're trying to make plans for, you know, people who are older, people who are younger. And medicine is always changing. There are new drugs, new procedures, new types of physicians doing new types of things in different ways. Complexity, it's really just built into the system.
What healthcare really is this awkward word slapped on top of a million little tiny markets. So each time each insurance company, there were 1,760 different insurance companies that we send claims to, right? Each one of them has created some customizations that have turned into memos or faxes that have gone out to everyone. So you now have everyone has sent everyone a whole smorgasbord of little tidbits to know and keep in mind when treating this type of patient or that type of patient.
So granted, part of this complexity is built in, but it seems like it can be streamlined. And it hasn't up until this point, just because I think the doctors have been too disorganized. Like, you know, basically, sure, all the doctors could band together and call all the insurance companies and say, hey, guys, do you think you could make this a little bit more streamlined? Or do you think you could simplify your billing codes a little bit? But, you know, the last thing doctors want to do is get on the phone even more with insurance companies.
So now what is happening is that you have some bigger intermediaries, places like Athena Health, Jonathan Bush's company, and others, that it's in their financial interest to call up insurance companies and say, look, what do we need to do to get this done? I'll write you the code. I'll write you the computer program, whatever it is, to get rid of faxes, to make the billing simpler. They have a financial interest to do it. So that is pushing to make the system a little more efficient.
So if he's good at his job, he might eat into that $7 billion waste number that we talked about at the top of the show. Although if he's really good at his job, he'll put himself out of business.
He said he didn't think there's any danger.
He doesn't.
That he's going to be so good at eliminating medical complexity that his company won't need to be there.
All right. I think that does it for us today. You can send us a fax. It's this amazing device where you can send paper through the phone lines in just minutes. We're at 212-880-3429.
We're also trying out this thing called electronic mail, planetmoney@npr.org. We're also weblogging npr.org/money. I'm David Kestenbaum.
And I'm Alex Bloomberg. Thank you for listening. Can fix you back up the nicest. Upright is in my hand for writing, but I'm a doctor, they don't understand my writing, so I stop writing. Now I'm like lightning, and you ain't fish young, so don't clash with the titan. Fast and exciting, my passion is frightening. The limit was a more vocab in your IV. Here, take this Vicodin, like it and love it, and confidence has no budget. So pay me no mind, I don't walk it like I talk it, cause I run it, I don't do it cause I done it, and I'm in the emergency unit.